Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
On today's episode, Garth Jones returns with his segment, Pass the Ammo, as we take a look at the new Australian TV series, Firebite. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I'd be proud to be considered deadly here at Big Squid. Thank you for joining me for today's episode, where Garth continues his look into the world of Ausploitation with the brand new series Firebite, an Australian vampire series created by Warwick Thornton and Brendan Fletcher, starring Rob Collins, Shantae Barnes-Cohen, Yael Stone and Callan Mulvey. We're only touching on the first episode, so it is fairly free of spoilers, so you'll be able to listen and not have anything ruined. So if you think we're giving away too much, it's okay. Garth is actually really careful, to the extent that he doesn't answer one of my questions because he's scared, because he's a few episodes ahead, he's uncertain of giving anything away. But it's all about the first episode. It's all about giving you an idea what it's all about. So, and I loved it too. I thought it was great. I had a really good time watching it. And I hope if you haven't heard about it or you haven't seen it, this gives you a sense of what the show was like. And maybe you might like to check it out as well. Before we get into a couple of things, we're slowly getting back into gear for the new year and have a few podcasts all ready to go. Next week, Ben Elwood is back as we continue our latest deep dive director series with David Lynch and his film Blue Velvet. That will be next Tuesday, and then the week after that, Ben returns again as we kick our new season of Space Podyssey into action. Do you want to know what the movie is? Because we recorded it yesterday, so maybe you'll have a little head start to check out which film. Do you want to know? Should I tell you now? Should I tell you next week? I'll tell you now, it's Gravity, Sandra Bullock, George Clooney, Debris. Oh man, what a great film. We recorded that one yesterday and it is fantastic to be back on track with Ben and getting back into the groove. We have some great sci-fi movies coming up for you, so we're really looking forward to that. Also, you may have heard me talk about introducing a storytelling aspect to the podcast, and we're very close to releasing our first episode of Beautiful Tales for the Disenchanted. I'm really excited about this new addition to Big Squid. I have some pretty audacious plans for it down the track, and this first episode will be a stepping stone for where we'll be going later in the year. If you're wondering what is Beautiful Tales for the Disenchanted, think of it as an anthology series of short stories that will range from the funny to the surreal to the sad. It will contain all sorts of stories, just as we enjoy all sorts of art and entertainment here on this podcast. So I'm really pumped about that. Our Patreon supporters have heard some of the works in progress. When you sign up, sometimes you'll get a little sneak peek into what I'm working on. And so they've had an opportunity to have a listen. I've had some great feedback from everybody, and the first proper episode of that will be coming to you very soon. Oh, I can't wait. Speaking of Patreon, you may have heard on the podcast last week, Ange Lafoy-Pierre and I discussing the Irish saying that if you kill a spider, you destroy a part of your imagination. Now, I'd heard that saying. Someone told me that a long time ago, and then both of us couldn't find any proof of it online. Maybe I just didn't look hard enough. Ange couldn't find it. I couldn't find it. We started to wonder, has someone been pulling my leg? Anyway, I am happy to report that one of our Patreon subscribers, Angus, has written to me. Hello, Angus. How are you? Angus wrote to me and said, can confirm that the Irish saying about spiders is real. My wife's Irish great-grandmother used to say it. Once they moved to Australia, they decided that our spiders were worth losing part of the imagination for. Man, thank you for clearing that up, Angus, and it makes perfect sense that you'd throw the saying out the window after you saw our giant-sized creepy crawlies here in this country. So, whew, that's all cleared up. I feel less insane. And any day that you can say that feels like a win, right? Our Patreon numbers are building nicely, and if you're keen for extra podcasts, scripts, stickers, and a shout-out, head over to patreon.com/JustinHamilton_BigSquid, and you can find a tier that suits you. Today's shout-out goes to longtime listener Patricia Esquara. Is that right? Esquara? God, I should have checked that one. Sorry, Patricia. Patricia somehow not only manages to listen to the podcast between juggling her two children and family life, she also manages to write to me as well. Patricia and I share an aversion to horror movies. Yes, I'm a bit of a wimp, to be honest. I'm still recovering from Hereditary. I watched that 2 years ago. I still have creepy crawly moments about that. Wah. Anyway, it's always nice to have someone make you feel better about being a scaredy cat. So thanks, Patricia, and I hope you enjoy today's show. I know we're talking about a horror show, but it's not that scary. I promise you, Patricia, I really enjoyed it, and I didn't have to wear the brown underwear. Ah, the brown underwear. I once heard Rob Sitch say that, and it's stuck with me for 33 years. Anyway, if you don't know who Rob Sitch is, you probably live overseas. A very funny man, a very big influence on me as a comedian when I was younger. Anyway, this is one of those typical tangents that we don't need. So anyway, thanks, Patricia. Don't worry about what we're talking about in the episode today. It's not that scary. It's more exploitation than scary. Remember, for the rest of you, if money is tight but you'd still like to contribute to the podcast, please leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Big Squid, or even just suggesting us to your cool friends. Not the other ones, just the ones you know will dig what we're doing here. We don't want the other ones. You don't want the other ones here, right? They'll annoy you. But that's a very helpful way to contribute as well. Let's bring in my good pal Garth Jones as we head to Opal City, where two Indigenous Australians, Tyson and Shanika, do their best to battle the last colony of vampires in Firebite. And there's only one segment that's big enough, bold enough, and exciting enough to be able to discuss this new TV show properly. And that segment is...
I don't know what's on the ground next.
So he taught you about vampires?
Yeah.
He ever take you down?
No, we're not allowed to go down.
So what do you do?
Pest control. Above ground only.
Woo! Oh! Take that, you blood-sucking bastard!
Oh, be careful about teasing Shanika about your blood hunting.
I'm not a blood hunter.
What stopped him?
He's not following law.
Same law that says women can't hold boomerangs.
And you
choose to piss your life away.
Oh, shut up.
I hunt vampires my own way.
There's a king vampire here in town.
Get your fighting face on.
I'm scared every day of losing you.
Can't you just pull up like a normal person?
Oh, hero's life, Neeks. I didn't choose it. Chose me.
I'll be honest, it was a bit of a pain in the ass setting up AMC because I thought it was something that was a part of my subscription already. And then to go in and find that through the site you can get all these other subscriptions and you have to kind of go through them one at a time. And then the site kept trying to take me to Amazon Music, which I didn't want, etc., blah, blah, blah. And then eventually I finally got to Firebyte and I watched it and I was rapt because I really enjoyed it and it was well worth the pain in the ass that comes with trying to set up a new channel.
You sure do need to dedicate yourself to this one, don't you? Because I was pretty fucked off with the entire process.
It's tricky.
It's an Australian TV show made outside Cooper Petey.
Yeah.
And you've got to add all these different options to the Jeff Bezos channel to get there.
Oh, my Lord. It's far out. This is this should be our thing. We shouldn't have to be signing up. This is ours.
Yeah, it's insane. But, the avenues that they had to go through to actually get it made.
Yeah.
Ended up being a foreign stream, a US streaming service to get this content out there.
Which is insane to me because this is exactly the kind of stuff that I feel like, I feel like this could find a place on free-to-air television, put it on at, 9:30 show and just also let it sit there, invest in it, let it have its time, let it find its feet. As someone who's not really interested in vampires, I found Firebyte to be a really fun reinterpretation of the vampire mythology. And I'm wondering, how much of the Ozploitation genre can we attribute to this reimagining?
I think the broad strokes are that, Warwick Thornton is a, extremely renowned serious filmmaker.
Mm.
Who's just said, fuck it. I'm going to tell, this punk's rock and roll story. That sort of reimagines all those sort of tropes about, colonization and the entire, the Australian identity.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't give a shit. And maybe that's why it didn't get made in Australia first up. Because we're not ready for that. We're not capable of that, I guess, in the in our mainstream TV production sense, because we're too busy making Howzo's season 28 or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because it is, on the one hand, I feel like if this was a serious exploration of what happened back then suddenly we'd be more interested in making it because it's making a statement. But then in the process of doing that, what you're essentially making is a film that will probably win some awards but not be seen by the greater populace. But because this is genre and is also just fun by putting in stuff that comes from our history and building upon it, it somehow suddenly gets negated as not being serious enough or not engaging with the topic in a more mature way.
It's tough, isn't it? Because that's sort of what, genre fiction or genre film and television does. It's takes these concepts and it's the spoonful of sugar, you know, give you the crazy action scenes and all the rest, and also sort of there's some context.
Yeah.
Very deep in there.
Yeah, and it's always, I've always found with, you know, specifically genre work, it's usually there in a way that if you want to go and look deeper, you can, or you can just sit back and in this situation, just enjoy a story about two people going around and stopping vampires from...
And, yeah, using toxic guns and all the rest to like, take
yeah. it. Yeah. But it was interesting, like, from an exploitation angle, it seemed to have the sense of humour that's very prevalent in those previous movies that we've watched, and it also feels like it's a modernised version of that sense of humour. The language was beautiful, and hearing just the casualness of using their mob, the term of blackfella, which I've seen some American commentators have had to kind of explain, no, it's all right when they use that kind of language, you know, that kind of thing. But also the action also kind of had that hyper-realized chop suey kind of editing, and it was like a lot of fun.
Amazing freeze frames and sort of like sort of Sam Raimi-esque moments of just, you know, over the top sort of Bruce Campbell sort of gear for Tyson especially.
Yeah,
who is a bit of an Ash, I guess. Like if people have seen the Evil Dead movies, like he's a bit of a, you know, Warwick Thornton calls him a dickhead.
Right.
You know, that's his character trait. And it's, you know, he's got aspects of something like Ash Williams from Evil Dead.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know, too confident.
Yep.
A little bit out of his depth, but, like, still giving it a crack.
Yeah. His daughter calls him a dickhead.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it made me laugh so much. Even right from the beginning with the old lady strapped to the front of the car that they're driving through the night. And I think it's a throwaway line, but one of the first things he kind of mentions is, oh, you could have worn underwear. And it was just such a funny line. And it wasn't lent into, and it wasn't, here's my funny line. It was done in that throwaway Aussie kind of approach. Yeah. It was so good.
Yeah, now with the vernacular, like the aesthetic is, you know, spot on. Yeah, as you said, like it's really hard to sort of understand why you can't get access to it directly in this country.
Yeah. The Outback looks stunning as well. Like they've really captured those colours. If you've been out there in those areas, it's very recognisable, and it's funny. It gave me the same feeling I had when The Leftovers came down for season three. You find a sense of pride at looking at all of those, because they were out in the outback as well doing stuff, and it's just a totally alien kind of background that we don't really see that much in popular entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually a case of, you know, international filmmakers coming here to show us.
Yeah.
What they, you know, it's not particularly common for Australian filmmakers to really, you know, get in there. But like you've got, you know, films like Walkabout and Waking Fright in the early 70s where like Ted Kotcheff and Nicholas Roeg, like, you know, American director and an English director came out here and sort of showed us the identity that comes through the landscape as well, and just that complete harsh terror, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I grew up right in the middle of it, and it's definitely it's a really interesting sort of sense of just alienation, isn't it?
Yeah, and perfect for this story as well. Like, as I said,
it is fantastic in terms of like the white sands.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that environment's very different, like the cave systems, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Not really been shown on film before, and thankfully an Australian filmmaker had done that.
Yeah, and as I said, I'm not really interested in vampires. I feel like it's a pretty tired, classic monster that's been looked at in so many different ways. I'm not saying that there aren't versions that of movies and TV shows that have done it well, but overall it feels tired. But this has just kind of given it this new lease of life. Also, there was, and I guess it's because it's set in the outback, it really recalled the Mad Max franchise. Like the car specifically just had this good old fashioned heft to it. And chunky, looked like it could take some damage, looks like it would probably do a lot more damage. Are there any other Australian movies that you felt were in the DNA of this new series?
I mean, I started to think about not necessarily Australian films, but like even something hopefully we'll cover eventually, Joe Dante's Howling 3.
Right.
That was made in Australia. That was the last Super Bowl.
Yeah. I've never seen it.
You'll love it. It's got, it's completely insane. It's got nun werewolves. It's got,
great.
Yeah. It's, Miranda Otto's dad, Barry Otto.
Yeah.
In that era was doing a whole bunch of like, character work. He was in The Punisher with Dolph Lundgren as well.
Right.
But I think that sort of like, yeah, that sort of aesthetic and that sort of just balls to the wall sort of attitude is where that, but yeah, again, like I find it really hard to believe that like Australian film just sort of stopped making, or Australian producers stopped making this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
In 35 years ago.
Yeah.
And you have to go elsewhere to do it.
Is it maybe tied into the fact that we have that very specific cultural cringe where we're always just a little bit embarrassed about what we do, and if someone tries to overcome those barriers, then we're immediately like, you're up yourself, look at you, you're a bit too good for us, a bit too fancy. So is it both of those kinds of attitudes meeting, and then what they do is they negate us from looking in our own backyard and telling our own stories?
Well, I mean, look at, you know, it's a federal election year and we're almost entering year 9 of the coalition government. And that whole sort of quiet Australian attitude of like, just pull your head in, mate. Don't get too big for your vote. Just shut the fuck up and we'll get on with it. And it seems, you know, the cultural attitude, I mean, you know, when most of the exploitation stuff was really going strong, it was like Gough Whitlam.
Right.
And in power briefly. And then, you know, there was that sort of added sense that like you could actually like make these things that spoke a bit more to the true character of where we're at. But
yeah,
it's all sort of faded away, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's really disappointing, and I think that's kind of part of what made this first episode of this series so intoxicating, because there were lots of tropes that I recognised from other storylines, but they were all through the prism of the Aboriginal experience, and not just the Aboriginal, but the Australian experience as well. Like, I don't want to talk about it as if it's removed from us. It's all a part of us, and we should be discussing it more and embracing it and identifying it and through identification, you know, really enjoying it as well. I thought it did a remarkable job of setting everything up in 42 minutes. Like that world felt realised.
Yeah. And it's really, you know, the essence of like being in regional Australia and just that, you know, what that's like.
Yeah.
You know, knowing people who live in, well, I'm going to see someone tomorrow who lives pretty much like Tyson.
Right. Good luck.
Yeah, I've got his number now, but yeah. It is like a sort of existence that a lot of people can't really identify with.
Yeah.
You know, living in the sort of middle of nowhere and like having those sorts of, you know, obviously he's not a vampire hunter, but
right.
Just a different sort of experience of how the world works.
Yeah. You know, I even like the little touches, such as that the bar that he goes to is underground, and it's because of keeping the heat out. You know, it's just such a small thing that I've experienced when I traveled within, you know, the outback and the places that I've gone and performed, etc.
Yeah, I mean, have you been to White Cliffs?
No.
It's a similar scenario to Kirkapiti, but yeah, people actually, their houses are underground.
Yes,
They've just built underground because of the heat. Like, it's like 50, you know, 50 degrees Celsius pretty much all year round. So the best place to live is underground. So yeah. And that's what the vampires do too.
And it makes sense, right? And there's no fun. The best horror stories in any medium use the horror as a metaphor for a greater story. And I loved right from the beginning, once again, the idea that vampires were on the first fleet coming to Australia and becoming to discover that the Aboriginal people, their blood is
blood.
It's really tasty. It's the best blood, and they're addicted to it. And it's kind of this amazing stand-in for smallpox decimating our nation's first people. I did a little bit of research through the National Museum of Australia. I knew it was a lot, but they said it killed around 70% of people. Yeah, you know, what did you think of the blend of story and history in this opening episode?
I mean, I guess as we've discussed, you know, it's a case of like this might be the way to, you know, get people familiar with like the arc of our history, because, you know, we've spent, again, the last 25 years, we've had, you know, John Howard, Keith Windschuttle, all those guys talking about the black armband view of history and, you know, how we don't need to say sorry for things that were done by our ancestors and all that sort of stuff, you know, completely, you know, part of that sort of culture war that Australians aren't very comfortable delving into, are they?
No.
So, you know, unfortunately the show isn't easily accessible, but, like, if you can get access to it, you will see that, like, you know, there's a sort of... there's a gateway to learning and understanding some of these issues, even though it's a vampire show.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And once again, I was so curious. I had to read what American reviewers were saying about it. And, you know, it's like they seem to be learning from it. You know, they were having to do research and be able to discuss it, and then they were discussing it through the prism of what happened to their own Indigenous culture when, you know, it was overtaken as well. You know, there is that... It's one of the worst Australian traits for me, which is... When there was apartheid in South Africa, it's like, well, we're not going to go and play sport there because of apartheid. And it's like, okay, what are you doing for the Aboriginal people? It's like, what? Sorry? No, I'm not going to I'm not going to play cricket in South Africa because of apartheid. Yeah, but what are you going to do for Aboriginals?
You know, me and sport, but just the last week with the tennis dramas and, like, you know, Djokovic being in the same hotel as, like, people who have been detained for 10 years.
Right.
And people turning up to protest about his loss of liberty for, like, 48 hours while these poor bastards have been there for, like, you know, 8-9 years. Like, the priorities are just completely insane.
You know what I blame? I blame the success of Batman and Iron Man, which has made it completely normal for people to celebrate billionaires.
Yep.
So, you know, when the most rebellious person in the Avengers is the billionaire, you know, things aren't quite right.
Yeah.
A billionaire, a super soldier.
Why am I empathizing with that guy?
Yeah. And someone who, you know, is a prince of a royal family. Wait a minute, these are our heroes?
Aspiration.
Yeah.
Get on board.
Also, what was great about Firebite was it wasn't just the first fleet idea of instead of it being smallpox, but bringing vampires to Australia. It also showed that there are different cultures within the Aboriginal community where, you know, the community that Tyson is protecting don't really subscribe to his approach, don't really want him around. And there are other cultures, including the official blood hunters, as they're called, who do things in a very different way that he doesn't have any connection with. It all kind of really set up this world, and Opal City is just this beautifully realized place. And I hope they get lots of seasons, because I think it's really fertile.
How many episodes have you gotten for us so far?
I've only had time to watch the first one.
Okay. Yep. I won't go into any further spoilers.
Okay. Thanks. Well, I was gonna watch a few more, and then it was like, well, for this podcast, because we want to get people to potentially check it out.
Because like, I just don't think enough people know about it. And like, I've been, you know, following the hashtag, and it's, you know, pretty quiet out there on social media for it.
Right.
You know, I found a few tools on Internet Movie Database who are sledging it.
Well, we'll get to that at the end.
Sure we will,
I've got a few that.
Yeah.
There's some people at the end that that I really wanted to discuss, but fuck, there's some idiots out there. You know, as we talked about with the town and everything, the Opal tunnels as well is such a perfect idea that they would be hiding under there and have this whole community that's going and who knows how much it's thriving as well. And I love that too.
I do love that they all get around in their sort of like pseudo Victorian their cuffs and all the rest, and like, you know, wandering around a mining town. All these hard bastards, and they're turning up with their lacy cuffs to the pub. And it's a funny sort of contrast.
It's great. Well, you know, I was watching, my friend had never seen What We Do in the Shadows, and so we were watching that towards the end of last year, and I was kind of lamenting that beautiful New Zealand sense of not only sense of humour, but sense of community that's in that show. And then it's like, oh, well, hang on, we could possibly have it with this. The actors were great. Shantae Barnes-Cohen as Shanika is fantastic. She's an Aboriginal girl with a name of American origin, which means God's grace. And she is immediately likable, as she's smart, but she's intellectually uninspired. She's sensible and cocky. She's demoralized by surroundings, but she's also quick to jump into action. What did you like most about Shanika?
I'm going to really out myself on this one, but and having read all the terrible things about Joss Whedon again recently. You remember the last episode of Buffy?
Yeah.
Where all the girls get the Slayer power.
Yeah.
I've still got a little bit of a hankering for, like, Shanika maybe being one of the Slayers in that sense.
Oh, right.
Being active. Yeah. I mean, yeah, she's a great character, and, like, you know, her stepfather, Tyson's obviously a bit of a renegade.
Right.
But, yeah, she's got her head screwed on, and, like, yeah, just that. What a, you know, her limited options, but, you know, in that scenario.
Yeah.
But she's, you know, staunch and trying to, she'll eventually, you know, I think her brother has been kidnapped.
Right.
By the Vampire King. But yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like, just a really sort of stoic character that's like, you know, we don't see on screen a lot, I guess.
No, I particularly enjoyed, and it's something you just touched on then, is the fact that she is someone who intellectually has a lot going on and is quite clearly incredibly smart, but it's a very natural thing to have happen anywhere in the world, where if someone's not intellectually engaged, they can come across as, you know, being disruptive, or they can be misinterpreted as not being smart. And it's what you said. It's she lives in a world where her options to be anything she wants to be are severely limited. And I like the way that that kind of infuses a lot of her actions in that first episode.
And she throws herself into vampire hunting, as it goes.
Yeah.
Because she can, have some sort of control over things.
Yeah.
I mean, Cooper Petey, it's remote.
It is remote, yeah.
It's remote, all right. Yeah.
But also seeing what's happening to her at school with, you know, there is the boy who's, you know, a little bit obvious in the racist bullying, but it's only obvious because what we forget is this shit happens all the time. And, she's at a school that has, she wears a cross on her school uniform. She's got a very white teacher who doesn't really engage with her. It's all there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the narrative that she, she gives to the teacher, that's completely just like, dismissed.
Yeah.
In terms of the history of, what's going on. Sadly, that's exactly the case.
Yeah.
That rejection outright of anyone's story, or like inability to empathise in that sense.
Yeah. I thought Rob Collins was fantastic as Tyson. I thought he was cocky, like his daughter. Or is it father and daughter, or is it father and stepdaughter? Or I'm a little bit confused because she calls him by his real name.
I think that she's his stepdaughter.
Right.
I don't think he's the biological father. No.
Right. Okay. No. It was funny because there's not a lot of information on it. It was a bit difficult to chase that down.
As we've said, like, he's a loose cannon, and, he's the child.
Oh, yeah.
In that scenario.
Yeah. Well, it's great because he's kind of dedicated to his job, but he's also an outcast. He wears his disdain for relationships. It's more like a shield from stopping him from getting too close to people. I don't know about you, but he's drinking too much. He's a bit of a ladies' man and not afraid to, let anyone see that he's a bit of a ladies' man. But he was so compelling in that first episode. I don't know about you. I was completely convinced they were going to kill him off to at the end of the episode to show us the level of threat that we were up against, and then we would follow her and follow Shanika. And I'm so glad that they didn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I won't delve into the episodes after. I guess the spoiler is he's not dead yet.
Yeah,
but
good.
Like, maybe, a sense that maybe like that could be the end of season one, maybe. As a
Oh, I hope they don't though. Like he's a really good character.
Oh yeah, he's great fun. He's shown up in a couple of Warwick Thornton films, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, these great actors that just fly under the radar.
Yeah.
Because the roles are so limited here.
Yeah. Yeah. And also just like looks at home as a lead action hero as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's great fun. And yeah, you should I mean, I don't want to say that he should get a superhero role, but, like, he should definitely, you know, have a higher profile.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
You know, he's in his early 40s, rocking the dad bod.
Yeah.
Cheeky, you know, he's great fun, yeah.
Yeah, and something else that I loved was that this series and the characters are very knowing about their story. So this is a world that probably still sees Marvel movies and knows about Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey. And we know this is because this is how Tyson motivates himself and Shanika, often talking about the role of being a hero. And what did you think of the straddling of the line between action heroes and subverting the genre?
Yeah, I mean, as the show goes on a bit, I think you will see that, like, yeah, there's a embrace of a lot of those tropes as well. But yeah, it's a because you wouldn't have met the Bloodhunter yet, would you?
He's just arrived.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of great stuff that I won't delve into, just so people are surprised.
Yeah.
But I was doing a bit of reading today, and I think one great thing is, like, introducing the boomerang as a vampire-killing weapon.
Yeah.
That one owns.
Yeah.
Multi-purpose. I'll leave that online because I think it will spoil a few things if we go too far into that one.
Oh, okay. All right.
As the series goes on, yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that's interesting. There is what's also fun is that it seems that the series will explore an ongoing concern within Aboriginal communities, which is the traditional versus the modern. This is something that I've talked about with a good friend of mine, Brett Wheeler, who's worked with Aboriginal communities out in Kintore, and there are a lot of concerns with elders who are worried that the younger generation don't want to take on the traditions, aren't really that interested in the songs that they're meant to learn and the stories that they have imprinted on their weapons, etc. We see it as Tyson likes to do things his way and is removed from the traditional ways of the elders, who we know are called Bloodhunters. Where would you like to see this aspect of the story go? Do you want to see him embracing the more traditional side, or do you think it's more interesting to see him maybe take on aspects of it?
I think he might. Yeah, I think that might be part of his journey. As a father figure, as a, you know, parental, I think, the direction he'll go in is to, like, learn to respect the tradition. And again, I think Shanika will be the one who sort of, like, carries that on. I hope he sticks around. As you say, I'm not sure that the shelf life for Tyson is going to be much after the first season, but we'll see.
He's just too he's like Rutger Hauer in Blade Runner. He's just so big and imposing in every scene, and it feels like, you know, you don't have to get rid of him. You don't have to have him die off to prove any kind of point, etc. But because the show at this point seems to be adhering to some of these, sorry, what was that?
Because we're getting so invested in him, that would be, you know, the dramatic through line would make sense that, like, maybe that's the sort of, the next level, but we'll see, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, there's only 8 episodes, so, you know, the first season's 8 episodes.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll keep going. The use of language was fantastic. I loved the Chinese restaurant. The Chinese restaurant was great. It really gave me not only a sense of... do you remember that film, The Rover, with Guy Pearce?
Yes.
Yeah. There was gave me a little taste of that. And also, just once again, another subtle reminder of the broader Australian culture and the way it kind of permeates throughout the country.
The Chinese restaurant was the most exotic place we could go growing up.
Yeah.
Shag pile carpet and the wallpaper. And
yeah.
Yeah, it was a big cultural expedition.
Yeah.
to get out to the Oceania.
No, I loved it. It was such a, once again, it was such a nice little touch. And I also loved that the Slade vampire was wearing a Southern Cross t-shirt, which... If anyone isn't across it, Warwick Thornton made a documentary 5 years ago about the baggage that the symbol has to bear now that it is associated with violent nationalism. That was in the doco, We Don't Need a Map. So that was a nice little... And it's such a throwaway moment. It's such a small moment. But if you're across his... personal belief on it, it's just a tasty little treat. Was there anything else that stood out to you that we haven't covered in this first ep?
The analogues of the vampires being, you know, white supremacists, the colonizing force. It's just a very neat conceit, really, isn't it? Like, it works so well. I was just thinking earlier about, thankfully it didn't happen now because they'd probably send Boris Johnson over as a vampire.
Oh, jeez. Boris, who didn't realise that the rules he set into place are the rules that he was breaking.
Well, it's tough when you're at the top, you know?
It is tough.
But I just think it's a beautifully realised, and also Warwick Thornton is the director of photography as well, so he's shooting a lot of this stuff. So that's his aesthetic through the entire show, and it's a stunning piece of filmmaking as well. It's like just a really cool vampire show if that's what you're after, but also it's got depths, and you might learn something if you pay attention.
Yeah,
and that's not rare, but in a sort of Australian cultural landscape where it's mostly reality shows. And I just saw on my Instagram feed there was a call out for Housos in Broken Hill.
Right.
So that's happening. Thanks, SBS.
Yep, great. Yep. There we go.
We just need some Bogan blokes and some Shazzers. And they're going to get their money's worth out there, believe me.
They'll be overwhelmed, right?
Oh, my God. I'm not sure they're quite ready for it.
Yeah, right. Damn. You know what else I was really happy with was seeing the Adelaide Greyhound bus, which I have... I've been on that baby.
I've been on it heaps of times, yeah.
Yeah. Good advertising for them.
Yeah, just transport vampires to regional towns.
So to finish up, because you and I obviously enjoyed this and reckon it's worthwhile checking out, each episode's around 40 odd minutes. It's a perfect, if you're into binging. I think seven of the episodes
are coming out weekly.
Yeah.
Yes. Every Thursday.
Yeah, so if you wanted to catch up, it'd be easy to binge. Yeah. But there were some naysayers out there, and so I have three quotes that I want to read to you that are just great. So I want to see if you can, from these negative remarks, these are just remarks from viewers that just turn up on the... when you're looking stuff up on Google, right? So I want you to tell me if you can pick up on anything that they have in common. This is the first one. This is from David Douglas. I feel very comfortable in reading out his name because I have a feeling he's not listening to this podcast. And if he is, you're an asshat, David. So,
delete.
Yeah. So he says, this show couldn't go 10 minutes without injecting race politics into it. It's not just me that's sick and tired of stuff like this. It could have, I'm just pointing out, he wrote of, I'm not saying of. It could have been a great show about vampires versus humans, but instead we are force-fed more social political nonsense. Ignore this show as it's just people grandstanding and using social politics instead of caring about a story that could have been another stepping stone in the vampire genre.
Mm.
Mm.
Oh, okay. Yep.
That's great, isn't it? Because the vampire genre has only ever been about vampires. It's never been a metaphor for anything else.
no other metaphorical aspects of whatsoever.
That's amazing. I feel like if you pointed out, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula and all of the books and movies that have been made throughout the years, you know, he probably has no idea that when he watched True Blood that there was, you know, a goddamn gay agenda there as well.
Would have been, yeah. Oh, I don't know. Maybe. That's a lot to think about.
Yeah. So, yeah. Also, what I thoroughly enjoy. Okay, well, let me read out these next two first, right?
Yeah.
This is from SE, who gave it a 5-star review. SE gave it a 5-star review, but also included, maybe drop the race thing, please. It's like the only way people of color can be included is by only including them when someone needs to be terrorized. That was nice. From, I don't know what that means.
No.
And then this is from Marius Orion.
Yep.
And I'm going to read out the word that actually I could not, like, they've put in a misspelling of racial, but I'm just going to read it out as it was written, because why should I fix his mistake? Maybe drop the race thing, please. Sorry, that was SE. This is anti-white propaganda. I will remind to our enemies that we are 1 billion people worldwide. It's time to reject at the European level anything that comes for the entertainment puke from US. 10 years of instigation to racial mixing. In 10 years, nobody ended these pukes. Why? How is this possible? What's going on, Marius? Like, what is happening there? You know,
Marius Orion.
Yeah. So, what?
My guess: are we all talking about probably early middle-aged white men?
Maybe. Feels like it.
Probably identify with certain extreme right-wing ideologies coming on to. I was reading that there was a big influx of, like, just people, like, just review bombing in internet movie database over it, like, right. Basically like they do on Rotten Tomatoes, like, right. Trying to drag the rating down.
Right.
So there's a shitload of assholes who are just, like, giving it 1-star reviews and just going the sort of eugenics racist fucking angle.
Wow.
Because they can't handle it, can they?
It's what does it say about us that we watch something like this? Right. But what does it say about us that we watch these things and don't suddenly feel threatened? Like, are we missing the point? Are we meant to be threatened? Like, what's happening here?
I mean, you see, you know, our beloved Prime Minister today won't actually, like, censure George Christensen about his, you know, anti-vaccination stance for kids.
Mm.
You know, all these nutcases, you know, being in Queensland, they're all in far north Queensland, really, but, like, there's just, you know, there's just so much sentiment out there that's becoming more and more mainstream. Like, I'm shocked when I hear friends tell me that they've got, you know, mates who... you know, turning up to the rallies in Melbourne.
Yeah.
You know, they sort of, yeah, it's just getting a bit weird out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And if there's anything that I just have no time for, it's white people telling the Aboriginal community to shut the fuck up. You know,
Sorry. Yep. You're right.
No, but it's been going on for ages. You know, it's one of the reasons why I can't follow the AFL anymore, specifically through their absolute ineptitude at protecting someone like Adam Goods. And, you know, like I had friends who were booing him and they were saying, well, I'm not booing him because he's Aboriginal. I'm booing him because he stages for freeze. And it's like, well, even if that's your original reasoning, before everything went down. Your inability to look around and realize that maybe you're booing for a different reason to a lot of these people is a lack of character. You know, you might have been booing because he staged for Freeze, and that was just a footy thing, and that, of course, is fine. But it has now turned into something else, and by the time that got ahead of us, we were totally incapable of protecting one of the great players of our beloved game, and then also just protecting a person against obvious abuse.
What a fucking horrible way to pretty much end your career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We ran him out of the sport.
All that awful shit.
Yeah.
After on the way out the door.
Yeah. And it's because, you know, nobody, all these awful white men in ill-fitting suits who are in the upper echelons of AFL power, the fact remains that they're all pussies and they're all wimps, and I was just too close to it and I saw too much of it, and now I can't watch an AFL game because it reminds me of all of those people who, you know, they love their rhetoric, you know. Hey, we give the Aboriginal people a round in the football. Oh, we let the women have a round in the football. What more do they want, you know? And it's a real failure. And I hope people go and check this show out, because I think it is fun. I think it's really well made. I think it looks beautiful. And
I'd reassure you that it's not that hard to get it, really. Just have to hold your nose, get onto Prime Video, and just look for AMC.
Yeah.
It's like an extra $9 a month, I think, and you'll be able to watch them all in a week and then cancel it again.
Yeah.
Maybe you can watch Preacher too while you're there. Who knows? I'll watch all four seasons of Preacher. They're pretty good.
Yeah. But yeah, give it a go, and it'd be great to see it continue, because it's finally something that comes from our country and comes from a real talent in Thornton and all the people he's surrounding himself with.
Great filmmaker, and you know, just letting his hair literally down to just do something, just, you know, off the hook, and totally in the wheelhouse of, you know, what I'm into.
Yeah, and continuing that Ozploitation genre, and you know, kind of bringing it into 2022.
Like the soundtrack is amazing too. You know, I know there's various members of the Drones. I think the drummer from the Dirty Three, but I'm pretty sure there's like Melbourne band Amel and the Sniffers in there as well.
Yeah,
and just like real high energy Australian sort of rock and roll that's coming out now.
Yeah.
Like a really, really fun time.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. And I can't wait to watch the rest of the series and see where it goes. And fingers crossed, Tyson makes it all the way through. Yeah. What do you have coming up?
Garth and the X-Men.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah, he'll be Gate. What was his name? The Indigenous X-Men?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, shit.
I can't.
He was like Gateway or something.
Right.
That's more of a David Goldblum role, though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's not with us anymore. Yeah.
That would have been perfect. Hang on, let me just looking at, Gateway. The ability to teleport objects and people from one location to another.
Yep.
Great.
As drawn by Jim Lee, as just a generic African-American with like a couple of dots.
Well, you know, they gave it a crap. What's going on with your side of things? Before I let you go, I'm curious to know what's happening with your short story anthology that you've been working on.
I'm going to... When's this coming out?
This podcast will be like next week. So that will be something like the 25th of January.
Cool. I'll be putting up pre-orders for a short story anthology that I'll be publishing the Friday after Australia Day, so the 28th, I guess, 29th. And, yeah, I decided I have been around the traps enough in terms of publishing, design, editing, all the rest, that not going to wait for anyone to tell me I should be able to do it anymore, and I'll just release this stuff. So I will be doing a digital and print-on-demand collection of short stories that I wrote during the, I guess, the beginning of the pandemic.
Right.
Not about the pandemic, but, you know, stuff that was sort of just boiling away while I've been working on other things.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's like a 100-page story collection. It'll be like a $2 for a digital copy. It's got reviews slowly growing. You can go to my website, pastyaml.com, and just follow the cheaper skips link to get to the book. But, yeah, it's getting some nice heat happening on it. Some fun. There's a guy called Duvet Knox, who's a blaxploitation writer from the US, who's very kindly given me a very colourful quote
that I'll release
next week as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's getting, it's starting to sort of gain some momentum, and I think it's going to be a fun year for just like getting some content out there.
And I think it's the best way to do it too. Just do it yourself.
Yeah. So I, you know, the intention will be that like you'll be able to navigate through the book, and I'll do some bonus features like DVD stuff, so you can look at QR codes, get some extra insight into what was going on. There's some music being written for it.
Yeah.
And then when it launches in March, there'll be an announcement about something else I'm working on that's quite a lot bigger, but I just will keep that up my sleeve for now.
Okay, that sounds good.
It'll be a fun year.
Well, can you give us a couple of the titles and synopsis of the short stories? Or at least the one you're going to lead with?
So there's a few things that are sort of tangential to a bigger work I've been writing, which are, I've got a main character called Ed Von Satan that you helped out with as well, who's a zombified pub rocker.
Yep.
And there's a sort of extended story in there about, look, let's be frank, I lived in Shepparton for a year with my partner, and it's sort of like at the start of a book where people, you know, characters are aren't based on anyone living. That's bullshit. This is entirely about living in Shepparton.
Right.
You know, stuff happened there. But just skewed enough to hopefully not get me in trouble.
Great.
There's some insights into like, you know, living in small towns. There's some sort of angsty sort of patriarchal stuff. There's fun stuff about going on holidays in Noosa and hating all the white Anglo-Saxon people I'm surrounded by.
Right.
Sort of the range of experiences during the sort of weird first 2 years of the pandemic, really.
Yeah.
But again, not about it, just sort of like inspired by what's been going on.
Yeah, it's more like an emotional response than a factual response.
Yeah, I'm not having not cracking the sads about being trapped inside with a 2-year-old for like, you know, 6 months or whatever. There's laughs in there. It gets a bit dark, but there's a range of different things in there, and I think it's a good window into what I'm hopefully going to be able to achieve this year and ongoing in terms of the writing stuff.
Yeah, well, I know some of your plans, and they're really exciting, and I'm looking forward to not only seeing them come out, but as I said on a previous podcast, you've already planned the Pass the Amel segment for this podcast for the year. So we have a lot of stuff to churn through, and I'm really looking forward to it.
That's going to be fun. I think, they're all going to, if we sort of stick to what we've got there, it's going to be a... interesting 2022.
Yeah, that's great. And once again, we go to pastyaml.com for more information.
Social media, pastyaml, Twitter and Instagram. There's links everywhere for that stuff. Yeah,
great. All right, great to see you, Garth, and looking forward to catching up soon.
Thanks, Amo. Take care, mate.
A
big thank you, as always, to Garth Jones for his latest Pass the Amel segment. Garth has already planned out the whole year. That's right, a whole year of Pass the Amel segments, when we're very excited for what he has planned. If you'd like to read more of his work and be across everything he does have planned, not just here on this podcast, but with his own work, I'm posting a link on the Big Squid Facebook page so you can easily find his stuff. Garth has some audacious ideas, and I can't wait to see them set in motion. Thank you also to our Patreon subscriber for the episode, Patricia. I hope those little ones will give you enough space to check out Firebite. And as I said before, if I can watch it, Patricia, and not be scared, you'll be okay too. Remember, if you'd like an episode dedicated to you and some extra goodies, head over to patreon.com/JustinHamilton_BigSquid to find a tier that suits you if money is tight. And you know what? Money can be tight at times, and sometimes you just want to contribute, but you don't want to be out of pocket. Rate, review, and subscribe. That's a great way to be part of the team. Or you know what? Just listen to the podcast. If you're just enjoying the podcast, that's heaps as well. Still more to come up in the new year as we slowly ease into these opening weeks of 2022. I'm looking forward to showing you this new stuff, presenting it to you, hearing your feedback, and just being in touch with all of you fantastic listeners. Let's leave today with a quote from Warwick Thornton. In most of my films, I write the music into the script. I'm listening to songs and lyrics that empower the themes of the film. There's a lot of Indigenous music that has not been heard widely, and I love the idea of giving that music to the rest of the world. If you can, check out Firebite. I reckon you'll have a really good time with it. Until then.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.